Women's Talk Global, Happy New Year. I think Christine and I have agreed that we can say this for a couple more days. We're very proud to be hosting the third edition of the Women in Food and Farming broadcast today. Christine and I are going to have a quick catch up. Then we're going to have our guest speaker on, Jane Creagy, speaking on the really important subject of the Rural Youth Project that she's highly involved with. Post that, we're going to move over to the breakout room so that you could all catch up in this new year and have a good natter and see where we all are, especially with all the announcements that have been going on over the last 24 hours. Just quickly, bit of an advertorial on Beanstalk. If you're not already aware, we created Beanstalk to support and educate and promote the international fresh food sectors to help them thrive and grow faster. We've conducted some 40 plus webinars before morphing to monthly broadcasts for key groups and sectors that we wish to assist to grow, women in food and farming being a classic example. We're undertaking broadcasts now across the globe and very excited to announce what we have coming up early this year. So watch this space, please. So let's get on with this. Christine, how are you?
Well, I'm very well, thank you, and I'm actually enjoying being locked in my home with my children in their 20s, who I never expected to be back living with me again. And I had my first day in my new job today on Red Tractor, so I've been being inducted all day.
Yeah, so tell us all about that. So firstly, before we get you to wax lyrical about Red Tractor, when I posted up that you gained that role, the amount of positivity that came out on social media about it, in the respect of we couldn't think of a better person to do the job. So well done on gaining the role. I suppose I was going to compare it a bit like the incoming US president when he hopefully gets inaugurated and we say goodbye to President Trump. Mr. Biden, President Biden-elect, he's going to be challenged as to what he's going to achieve in his first 100 days of office. So come on, Christine, what do you want to achieve in your first 100 days of office of chair of Red Tractor, please?
I'm afraid I don't think we can compare the roles remotely. So I think my
course,
I thought about it like that, but I'm starting by trying to learn a lot about it. It's not something I've really understood well before until I was sort of doing all my research for the interview. So I suppose my first 100 days are probably going to be about listening, finding out what all the stakeholders have got to say, and making sure I understand it properly. And I have to say that of everything I heard today, I was actually most impressed. But I also, Max, I mean, thanks for posting, but I was overwhelmed by all of the positive messages. But I do get the feeling that particularly in the farming community, they all think there's quite a lot that needs to be done. So it's just what everybody thinks.
And Christine, I suppose it's that there's quite an interesting comparison with your role, your previous successfully held role as Gresham Code Adjudicator, because in that role you had to go out and gain the feelings, whether they be positive or negative, from suppliers, farmers and growers. For what it's worth, but I think I'm speaking for a lot of people, I think everyone has a very positive feeling towards Red Tractor, but there's so much more that can be done with it. So what we're hoping is what you've already achieved with the likes of the Grocery Code Adjudicator role, if you could duplicate that success with Red Tractor, I think it's going to be happy days. But as you've already intimated, I think there's a lot of work to be done. I suppose for you, it's a fantastic challenge because you want to get into something that needs to be reinvigorated, shaken around and pushed forward, don't you?
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously I'll do my very best. And I think, you know, it's only by understanding it that you can then start taking the whole thing forward. But if ever there was a time to be supporting a brand that talks about British standards, it's now. With the, you know, we will be getting imports that are going to come in, produce the different standards. And therefore, you know, we've got a brand that's got, you know, I think it's got high recognition already. We just need to make it really stand for something that supports British food.
Yeah. OK, so let's all get behind Christine on that one. But that's a conversation for another day. But Christine, thank you very much for us getting that breaking news on your new role as chair of Red Tractor. So Women in Food and Farming, Christine, what is that about, please? What is the group about?
The group is about having people coming together, talking about issues of the day and being there to support each other. Ultimately, I think that that particularly the food industry, food and farming industry, can be quite a lonely place for many women. And I think that there's a lot that we can do to support each other. And I think more this year, more than anything else, we know that a lot of the impact of COVID is actually falling on women in families. And I think that if having these meetings every month, getting people to talk about business, you know, maybe we can talk about impact, you know, how people are feeling. I've got no trouble what we talk about. But I think it's an opportunity for us to be there and to support each other.
Well said. And the previous two broadcasts that we've held with Anna Harris and Sharon Kennett, they were brilliant, weren't they? And especially they were brilliant. They were inspirational speakers. But I think the concept of you guys, yourself and Kirsty from MDS requesting to have the breakout rooms really works well, to have that share of community, because obviously we can't meet up face to face. And I know that was one of the key elements of the Women in Food and Farming group, as organised with the with Claire Smith from More People, to make sure there was always that face-to-face contact. So doing this on a monthly basis, and I think it's great, and hence the success that we've created to date.
Yeah, I'm quite keen to have a sort of a Jane speaking today, because I didn't want people to think that it was almost going, you know, that everything was going to be about personal development. So having a sort of a different type of topic today, just sort of continues with how we used to have the actual meetings, when we would just get somebody to talk about something that everybody would find interesting. And I hope that that's what Jane will do today.
So Kristen, you stay there. Fantastic segue. You should be in production. Jane, can you come on in? Can you turn on your video? So sure. Jane, say hello to the world. Say hello to everyone signed up on Zoom, and 97,000 people on Facebook and 22,000 people on LinkedIn, if they're all watching. Say hello to everyone.
No pressure at all then. Happy New Year to everybody. And I hope that you're finding a way to be positive despite the news about extended lockdown. I'm absolutely delighted to join today to talk about something that I'm hugely passionate about. And it's a project that has grown arms and legs over the last 3 years that we've been running it. It's called the Rural Youth Project, and we set it up to really understand why young people leave rural places and what we need to do to encourage them to come back. And my main business, so that's a sort of side project. My main business is a marketing and communications agency specializing in agriculture and rural. And I've been through a number of the leadership programs within agriculture. I think setting up something like the Rural Youth Project shows just what you can achieve if you believe in something and you feel passionate about making change and leaving a legacy. So it's also a little bit about, you know, that journey as well, if anybody's interested in asking me more about that. So I've said to Max,
fantastic. Carry on, Max. So Jane, I'm going to give you a nice big intro. But before we get into that, how do you know Christine? Christine, how do you know Jane? Jane, you go first.
We met when Christine was a director of the Oxford Farming Conference back in 2008,
I reckon.
I reckon it was 2008. But since then, we've got to know each other as friends as well, and her delightful daughter Eve came and interned for me for 2 years. So we've built a really deep and close relationship, and I've got a huge amount of respect for Christine and all that she does.
Fantastic. So Christine, what were your first impressions of Jane?
I think the first thing that anybody ever notices about Jane is her hair. If you don't know Jane, it is the longest head of hair I think I've ever seen. Jane is just like one of those sort of Duracell bunnies. She's always full of energy. Nothing ever phases her, always looks for positives in everything, and has got an absolutely lovely way of saying things to people, very unassuming, but always listen to her, because whatever she said is well worth taking notice of and acting on.
Oh, thank you, Chris. There we go. Maybe quite emotional.
So whilst Jane's having a quiet boo in the corner, Christine, if you could turn off your video and let me do my big intro for Jane. So the Rural Youth Project, Jane is a chartered marketeer with over 20 years experience in marketing with the agri-food sector. Jane, I'm saying this because we're going to put this out on a podcast. So although your introduction was very good, I want to give you a bit of a formal introduction so people know a bit more about you. You're also a member. So it's a bit like this is your life, isn't it? She's a member of the executive board of the International Federation of Agricultural Journalists and the Council of the British Guild of Agricultural Journalists. So the conversation that we are having today, and having done some research, and Jane sent me some amazing magazine proofs, is it Jane, of what you've got coming up this year. The Rural Youth Project, sorry, that's my mother. The Rural Youth Project is an international grassroots movement for positive change to empower young people of the age group of 18 to 28 years of age to develop their leadership, enterprise and activism skills, to play an integral part in making rural places attractive and viable for young people to build their lives and their futures there. Ultimately, the project wants to better understand young rural people, intergenerational links, and to stem the outflow of vibrant young people from rural places. This session with Jane, we want to seek to understand how our rural Generation Zs and millennials are feeling post-COVID, oh, good grief, in COVID, what keeps them living rurally, where the challenges lie, and what can be done to support them and to keep them driving rural communities forward. So Jane, what was the inspiration for you to create this movement in the first place?
I think probably two things, Max. The first was that I have a real passion for supporting and mentoring young women. I've always been very lucky in my career at every step of the way to have people that have believed in me and supported me. And I employ, my team is under the age of 30. So I know a lot about and have had to learn about managing and working with young people, but also really valuing the injection of energy that they give you to get up every morning and to do what you do and to feel really passionate about it. And then the second reason for starting it was that I travel a lot. As you mentioned, I'm involved with the International Federation of Ag Journalists. I'm also involved with the OECD on the Steering Committee for Rural Innovation. And everywhere I go in the world, one of the big malaises of rural places is the loss of its young people. Because once you lose your young people, you lose the services, you lose schools, you lose healthcare. And the energy and the life drains from an area. So I really wanted to understand what is it about young people leaving that we don't know enough about. You know, I really wanted to understand more about why they were leaving. And then from there, once you understand why they're leaving, you can start to look at solutions about, you know, how can you get them back? How can you encourage young people to make their lives in rural places, either by coming back or moving to? So really those two things were the catalyst. And I suppose just to add to that there was a real lack of information, up-to-date information about how rural young people were feeling. There's a lot out there about young farmers, but sometimes we forget that there is a wider community of young people living rurally, and the young nurses, young teachers, young retailers are just as important as young farmers.
But Jane, You're a professional marketeer. This isn't your job to do this. We pay our taxes to government to create this sort of support mechanism. Why have you had to step in to create this particular project?
I suppose I'm a great believer in giving back. And I suppose rather naively and on a very small scale, I believe that I can make a difference in this area. And I had no idea just how important the timing of this was. And just how little there was being done to really understand rural young people. So it was really the belief that I could give back and I could do something. So that was really my catalyst. So a bit of naivety thrown into the mix.
I think there's very little naivety with you, Jane. Money. Sorry to talk about money, but this obviously will take a lot of resource to get funded. Have you been able to source some sort of funding to get this set up and away? How do you fund it?
Well, to start with, I funded it myself and I have invested. So myself and Rebecca Dawes, we started this together. All of our time is voluntary, even now that we've set up a company limited by guarantee for the project. We were very lucky in our first year. Our intention after we'd done our initial research was to run an ideas festival. So I've been in, to the Do lectures down in Wales a number of times, and I was just been blown away about that model of getting people together for 3 days in a field, camping, hearing from inspiring speakers and meeting inspiring delegates. And I thought, you know, for young people, this would really work. So we started talking about this concept of running an ideas festival with young people and bringing their peers to come and talk to them about their woes, their ambition, their successes. And we were very lucky to be approached by Perth and Kinross Leader to say that they would be happy to talk to us about funding. So we had the first ideas festival funded by Leader. And then that then created a conversation about continuing Leader involvement. So we've now got funding from five local action groups in Scotland. So Angus, Lanarkshire, the Scottish Borders, the Outer Hebrides and Perth and Kinross. So very diverse areas, some island communities, some remote, but some very close to urban conurbations. And then we also had some support from Scottish Enterprise, which is the trade and industry arm of the Scottish government. So all of our investment has been Scotland centric, but with a lot of investment from me out of my own pocket.
And I suppose on that side, would it be, I just got to ask a request of Debbie. Debbie, it's fantastic to see you, but could you turn off your video for us, please? Thank you, Debbie. Jane, would you like to get what's the buzz term? Corporate sponsorship, because it feels like we talk so much in our various broadcasts about sustainability, about diversity, about being good. So if there were corporate sponsors, so I'm just making it up, the likes of a Barclays Bank or an ag-based solicitors, would you be keen to get corporate sponsorship to help you as well?
Definitely, Max. I mean, the most important thing is like minds, you know, people that believe as passionately about this issue, this challenge, as we do. So, you know, we've had one commercial sponsor. So InterAgro, Emma Ralph and InterAgro gave us a little bit of funding towards the podcast that we do, which allowed us to buy some kit. But yeah, we're really open to people that want to get involved. Our Leader funding actually runs out at the end of February. So come the end of February, we're going to be looking for support. And if I don't get it, then I'll carry on investing in it myself.
Wow. Okay. But let's not be modest with the network that we've got here with everyone on Zoom, everyone on Facebook, everyone on LinkedIn. We'll put up Jane's website to have a look at later. But if you could have a look at it, and if you would like to get involved and make a difference, please contact Jane directly. So women in food and farming, I sort of know the answer to this question, but it'd be fascinated to hear your answer, Jane. Why do you think your group, the Rural Youth Project, is relevant to women in food and farming, please?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think, I mean, I'm an agriculturalist by training, and I started my career working in communications dominantly with businesses that were selling to farmers. So I love farming, and I understand it. I understand everything about it, and it is the dominant source of our income as a marketing business. But I've also recognised, I live very rurally, and I've recognised just how important a vibrant rural economy is to agriculture. You know, they are symbiotic. And one of the things that you see with rural communities that are working really effectively, where you've got good intergenerational links, you've got parish councils that are open to new ideas, that are embracing of young people, then it creates this little microcosm of energy, and you start to find people that can come and work in your business locally. I mean, my business is a really good example. A lot of the people that work for me are really cool young people that live locally and are passionate about what they do. I've just been reading over Christmas the founder of Patagonia's book, Let My People Go Surfing. And he talks about the passion of, they're an outdoor gear business. And he said, you can teach people business skills, but you can't teach them the passion. You can't teach them the passion for what we do. And I feel very similarly for what I do in my core business, but also this side project, that to really understand it and to make a difference, you've got to understand the dynamics of those rural communities. And so for us as a community of women in the fresh produce, agriculture and food sector, I think we all need to invest at a very local level, communities that are self-sustaining, you know, where we can recruit young people into businesses within rural places and create that resilience at a very local level. And I know Keir Starmer's been talking about this, about pushing out decision making even further than devolved nations and into local communities. And I completely agree with him. And that's not a political statement. That's a passion-driven belief that I have, that communities have just such a power to create their own solutions.
Jane, well said. So let's get into the, using an agricultural terminology, the nuts and bolts of the target age group. The target age group is 18 to 28 years, which obviously spans the millennials and the Generation Zs. So what's important to know about the mindset of these groups, please?
I suppose the first thing to understand, and you know, I'm learning as I go, and I do listen a lot and read a lot about the Gen Zs and the millennials, but also through the work that we've done with young people with the Rural Youth Project over the last three years, we've learned a lot about behaviours and mindsets. And I have done a crib sheet here. I've just sort of noted down what I think they are. So the two groups are very different. Even though they're very close in age, they're very different. And it's something we can maybe pick up in the breakup groups. But the millennials, so the born in 1980 to 1996, they're tech savvy. So they haven't always known technology, but they're very savvy with it. They've lived most of their lives with it. Their focus is now. In terms of brands, so this gives an insight to their mindset. So if you're thinking about brands that the millennials might like, they must align to their values, their own personal values. The millennials are idealistic and they're optimistic. They search for flexibility and for freedom. They're more entrepreneurial than the Gen Zers. They're very collaborative and they want to be successful. So it's about me shining. The Gen Zers, so the 97 to 2010, they're technically innate. You know, they were born, bred, you know, from in the womb, they were using and accessing technology almost. Their focus is very much the future. So when you see the environmental campaigning that you see with Greta Thunberg and young people like that, they believe in the future and they believe that they can change the future. In terms of brand alignment, it needs to be authentic. They're very pragmatic and realistic. And interestingly, they search for the truth and security. And they're probably less entrepreneurial and more about stability than the millennials. They're very demanding, which as an employer can be difficult. They feel they have a right to things. And they want to stand out. So again, it's about me, but they want to be famous, a lot of them. So that's my thought on what the difference between Gen Zers and millennials.
And do you think the way that you describe them, do you think young rural people face a different challenge now as we're hopefully coming out the back end of this pandemic? Do you think the way that you describe them, do you think that's going to change, or is that actually going to accelerate?
I mean, going back to your first point of the question was, you know, what are the challenges? I mean, there are some rurally, the challenges are different, just the spatial differences for a start. But you know, the research that we've done and the many conversations that we've had with young people, there are some issues that are always there, like housing, affordability of housing, the location of that housing related to their work, transport, poor public transport, they need a car. So those are the repeated things that we hear. in terms of income, so always from our research, the income for rural young people tends to be about 30% lower than their urban counterparts. And they often have multiple jobs to keep the level of income going. COVID has affected that quite significantly, because a lot of those sort of suite of jobs that they might have done to get that income, many of them were in possibly hospitality and tourism, and those options have gone. So what concerns me going forward is the unemployment that's going to result in rural areas and the impact that it has, because they don't have access to the same infrastructure that their urban counterparts have. Digital connectivity has really shone, you know, it's been a constant issue for young people. It's become even more of an issue during COVID, because, you know, that's their social life gone, that's their ability to earn money gone. So, you know, that's been a massive issue. The other thing that young people say, and this is the shocker that repeatedly comes back, is they don't feel they have a say in their local community. And I think that will be, so only 13% feel they have a say in their local community. And I think that will be diminished even further by COVID. But there are some real positives. I don't want to say that it's all negative. You know, young people, so in our initial survey work we did in 2018, 72% of young people said they were optimistic about their future in rural places and didn't want to move to a town or city. Post or during COVID, so we surveyed them in July and August, only 40% were optimistic about their future in rural places. But one overriding thing that keeps coming back, the reason that young people want to live in rural areas, is their love of place. It's an emotional connection, either to the place, to the people, the landscape. Now, I think that optimism, they've also said they, despite COVID, they don't want to move to cities, and they have this deep love and connection to place. And that gives me great hope that, you know, provided we can find ways to encourage them, and that's where we've been doing a lot of work to build their own businesses, to make their homes there, that the future can be positive. And we've been working quite closely with the Scottish Government, looking at ways that we can start to, you know, spur some of that activity.
And internationally, you've set this up as an international project. How does that impact young? How's that going to impact on a locational basis for young rural people? Because presumably the way that you described it, I presume it's fairly Scottish centric. But when you say international, are you looking to branch out into Europe, into Africa, into America? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we've been international from the outset. We've wanted to understand, you know, how the UK compares and contrasts with other parts of the world, and the challenges are the same the world over. What actually happens at community and governmental level does differ. And that's where we've been very instrumental in listening to young people, listening to communities where they have been successful in encouraging young people back. And when you see strong, positive, visionary leadership in a place, it can be immensely powerful at attracting young people. There's a really good example of a place I went to in northeast Queensland, a place called Winton. And I went there at the height of the drought back in 2015. And they had such strong visionary leaders that managed to melt together these really seemingly random attributes. So it was where Waltzing Matilda was written. It's got fantastic landscape where there's a great backdrop for filming. So, and a farmer had found dinosaur bones. So they managed to pull together these random things to create one of the most vibrant music festivals. They have an outdoor film festival every year. They are a filming location now. They have a Waltzing Matilda museum, and they have one of the best paleontology centres in the world. And that was four mainly farming leaders that basically used their federal income and their state income in a really positive way for the community. And that was, that has been hugely powerful for encouraging young people to come back.
So just on that side of coming back, what gives you hope for, so we can learn from you in the respect of all are living in, what gives you hope that young people will be part of rural repopulation? What hope have you got?
I think this, that love of place that I mentioned, you know, the thing that connects young people to rural places is always there. And if anything, the fear of going to the cities and COVID, you know, that's almost enhanced their ability, you know, their recognition that their future is in that place. The work that we've been doing with young people to encourage their entrepreneurialism, and to think about, you know, the power of being able to set up a micro business, you know, that's really resonated with a lot of young people, where they may only earn 15 to 18,000 a year, but if they're living at home and they can then afford to run a car, and they can do all of their transactions online if their connectivity is good enough, then that and a little bit of top-up work when we're out of COVID is enough to give them the lifestyle that they want. And they're, one of the things that we found from our research is that if young people feel that they can live where they want, they have the flexibility, they can maybe take a portfolio approach to their careers or their income streams, then they'll forego income, they'll forego a decent place to live, because they really want to live in that place, and they are doing something that is true to the very heart of their being, that they want to, that's what they want to do. So that gives me great hope. And I think the other thing is that governments all over the world, I'm seeing it through my OECD work and also with the Scottish government, they recognize just how important young people are to the future. And they are really listening to them and wanting to encourage them to join our boards, you know. And that's another shout out to all of us in this group. You know, we all are, I know a lot of women on this call, and we all are really good already at doing that. But, you know, embrace a young person into a role on a board or onto a parish council and actually hear what they have to say, because there's a hell of a lot of wisdom in some of those young minds. And I think sometimes as we get older, we forget to listen. But I know that governments are listening, communities are listening, and certainly organisations like ours are listening.
Jane, I could speak to you all day, because I think we've got so much to learn from you, but we're running out of time before we move into the breakout rooms. But most importantly, how can we all get involved with the project so that we can duplicate it, replicate it, learn from you and set up similar projects? How can we get involved, please?
Well, I mean, we are really, I said to you earlier today, Max, when we were having a chat before this, we are completely open. If anything I've said resonates with you, have a look at our website, ruralyouthproject.com. And if there's loads of case studies and podcasts on there, if any of it resonates with you and you want to find out more, get in touch. If you've got any ideas about things that you want to do, which would be a win-win for us and you, then also we're all ears. As I mentioned before, our funding runs out in February. If I don't get funding, I'll still carry on doing this and investing in it. But we have a heap of things that we're planning. So when we come out of COVID, we're going to be running ideas festivals again. So over 3 days in a field, inspiring speakers. So we're going to be looking for sponsors to make that possible, because I don't really want to invest in that, because it's a costly thing to do. But, you know, also research, we're looking to do some research into cool businesses. So we know that if a rural business is cool, then young people are more likely to want to work for those businesses. We want to do a little bit of research into understanding what exactly is a cool rural business, and what is a model that we could put in place to help people that want to set up cool rural businesses. So we've got a whole heap of ideas. So if anything resonates with you, just get in touch and I'll stop talking.
I think if anyone wants to look at a cool business, they're just going to look at yours, Jane.
Oh, thank you, Max. I'm not sure about that.
So Jane, I think that's been fascinating. Christine, could you just come back in, please? I think that's been an absolute masterclass from Jane, and we'll, on all the follow-ups, we'll put the websites on. Christine, that was amazing. It's fantastic, wasn't it? I'd already found out a lot by looking at the website, but to actually hear it from Jane was even more enlightening.
Yes, and I did, you know, followed some of the Ideas Festival they've had before, and I know some people from MDS went to it and were totally inspired, and actually they all came away wanting to work for Jane. So I think she influenced lots of people by setting such an excellent example herself. I think, Jane, one of the things that we were talking about before we started was broadband, and if only we had decent broadband in rural areas, a lot of businesses can run from there. We all now know that so much of work can be done from home. And I'm just wondering whether actually that isn't the biggest thing that we can all be pushing for, is to have access so that people can, if they want to be a media influencer or whatever they want to do, they need access to the internet.
Yeah, I completely agree, Christine. And it's not just here in the UK. You know, during the height of the drought in Australia, in Queensland, that's what they were asking for. They were asking for the state to put in super fast broadband, because once you've got it, a whole multitude of businesses can develop on the back of it. You just need to look at Highlands and Islands in Scotland. You know, some of the Hebridean Islands have really vibrant businesses, and the north, far north of Scotland, because there's been investment in broadband. So I think it's one of the single biggest things that politicians need to grip.
And the other thing, which, sort of going back to some of the sort of the reasons behind the Women in Food and Farming Network in the first place, is access to a mentor and someone that can help them, and just partner. I mean, I would love to partner a 19-year-old that wanted to start a business, and I'm sure I'd be learning as much from them as they would be from me. But I just think we can, just as somebody that they can talk to that's maybe been around the houses and had some of the, you know, tell them about some pitfalls that I fell into that I could maybe stop them falling into.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I didn't touch on today, but one of the things we've been allowed to do, we had to change the purpose and the investment of the leader funds that we had. And one of the agreements, so two things that have come as a result of COVID. One is we've launched a magazine, which with one of the final stages of the issue one at the moment, and I'll circulate it to everybody via Max once it's live. The other is a smart village, and the smart village is basically a digitally connected community. And one of the things we're looking to do on there, Christine, is mentoring, so matching people together. So your wish might be a reality.
Go on, Christine. One last word before I take command.
Speaking to somebody in a rural community earlier, that actually trying to help people with childcare and that sort of thing in rural communities, I think it's also very important. You know, and you know, these 18 to 28 year olds will get a bit older and they will start having children. And I think childcare is another big thing that we need to be pushing for, because it's much more difficult to access that, because there's, you know, you're miles from a town where you might have a nursery.
I completely agree, Christine. You know, and that's down to us as humans, being human, isn't it? And being kind and caring. You're an incredibly compassionate lady, you know, and with all of us, you give a lot. And I think there's a lot to be said for that at a local level. You know, one of the things, we've got spare desks here, and I've already said to a couple of young people, just come, base yourselves in our office once we're out of COVID. We've got good broadband now. Just come and base yourself here. So I think, you know, at a very personal level, there are things that we can do to help young people. And to, you know, one of the things that they often mask is their lack of confidence and self-esteem and lack of direction. They won't tell you they need it. So you've got to fish it out of them and just give them guidance, which I know you get because you do it very instinctively as well. But I think it's just, you know, asking yourself, what can I do to help one young person? Because if we all did something, there are 44 of us on this call, that's 44 young people that have had a helping hand from a very inspiring person.
Jane, well done. Christine, Jane, just before we move on to the breakout rooms, we're in a seminal moment with the announcement from the Prime Minister yesterday that basically the whole of the UK is under a 6-week lockdown. I just wanted to lean on you both so that we could gain your advice as to how everyone can cope for the next 6 weeks, either on a work, on a mental health basis as to what we can do to be strong for the next 6 weeks. So Christine, if it's okay just to start with you, what's your advice as to how we can get through this next 6 weeks and look to turn this horrible negative into a positive? What's your advice, please, Christine?
Keep talking to people and watch out for signs that other people are struggling. And it's very easy to pick up a phone and have a chat to somebody who is. So just look out for signs that somebody else might need a little bit of your time.
Yeah, I would add.
Well done, Christine. Jane, what are your views, please?
Exercise, listening to podcasts. So I've listened to massive number of very diverse podcasts during lockdown while exercising. Like Christine, check in with friends and colleagues to make sure they're okay. If you've got a garden. And then I'm going to tell something that I've read and listened to on Audible over Christmas, and everybody should buy a copy of this, which is Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey. And it is just so uplifting. And if you love his accent as much as I do, then listen to it on Audible.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Well done, ladies. That's great. Let's just wrap up with our parish notices. Firstly, a big thank you to Kirsty from MDS for sorting out all the breakout rooms that they're going to be highly successful. Membership of Women in Food and Farming. We want the membership to grow, not disappear during this lockdown situation. If you go to the More People website, if you just go to Google and put in More People, Women in Food and Farming, you'll get taken to a link where we'll meet online on the page, Claire Smith, and you can sign up to join Women in Food and Farming so you can be alerted to these future broadcasts. So everyone, well done. Let's move out to the breakout rooms. We're just going to say goodbye to 96,000 people on Facebook and 22,000 people on LinkedIn. So Kirsty, if you could stop the live streaming at the top and we'll move into the breakout rooms, that will be fantastic. Thank you, everyone.